Hey, welcome back to Barks and Bookmarks. I have to issue an apology that this episode is a day late. I work nights, and I came home yesterday, started working on it, and I fell asleep. And so I woke up today and I was going to record, and then my entire script was just gone. So I had to rewrite everything really quick. Can I use the excuse Percy ate my homework? Anyways, let's just get on with it. If this is your first time here, my name is Sylvia, and this is my dog Percy. I hope you enjoyed the first episode. If there's any issue with the audio, please let me know. I'm still working on how to get everything to work together. And last episode, I mentioned that I didn't want to do series on this podcast, but I forgot to say that I don't mind doing the first book of the series, I just don't want to do the whole thing. So if this is your first time listening, I want to go over how I do things briefly. I'll start with some book details like author, narrator, pages, overall online ratings, and then what the book is about. Then I'll give you my one and only disclaimer before I jump right into the book. After I'm done with the book, I'll tell you what I liked and disliked and give you my rating out of 5 paws. So let's do it and get into the book. The book I chose for this episode is The Creeper by A.M. Shine. He is the author of The Watchers, which is also a movie with Dakota Fanning that you can watch on Max. The book came out on September 15th, 2022. It has 320 pages and is a 9-hour and 11-minute audiobook narrated by Aidan Kelly. It's rated 4.0 on Amazon and 3.7 on Goodreads. So, a little bit about the book. Superstitions only survive if people believe in them. Renowned academic Dr. Sparling seeks help with his project on a remote Irish village. Historical researchers Ben and Chloe are thrilled to be chosen until they arrive. The village is isolated and forgotten. There is no record of its history, its stories. There is no friendliness from the locals, only wary looks and whispers. The villagers lock down their homes at sundown. A nameless fear stalks the streets. Nobody will talk except a little girl. Her story strikes dread into the hearts of the newcomers. 3 times you see him, each night he comes closer. That night, Ben and Chloe sees a sinister figure watching them. He is the Creeper. He is the nameless fear in the night. Stories keep him alive, and nothing will keep him away. It has 27 chapters with a prologue and an epilogue. My disclaimer for this is, there's not too much in this book I feel like needs a warning. It's mainly like descriptions of things that might be a little graphic. Book takes place in a remote Irish village that's cut off from modern life. Starts off with a girl named Fiona calling emergency services, but she knows she's beyond saving. A man is slapping his hands over his mouth, and he seems to be some sort of delusion. He mentions, "You see him 3 times." She talks about how her parents are away for the weekend, but how her family home is where she feels the safest, and how she doesn't know if Tom, whoever he is, maybe her brother, is alive or dead, but he's in a different country for a different university, and hopefully it hasn't found him like it found her. She's barricaded herself in the house and is hiding in her childhood room. She feels she has no choice but to lock herself from the dark, wildering world outside. She says Tom had seen it that first night, also, but she hasn't spoken to anyone since then. She's getting so tired, but she sees a dark shape framed within the light on the floor under the door. She calls emergency services, then she looks up at the skylight in her room, and something is blocking the moon and stars. A doorbell goes off, and a man named Alec opens the door to a detective who identifies the man as Dr. Sparling. The detective is there to show him some case files not open to the public. The case files is on a student named Fiona Quinn who is missing. The doctor seems to know her. He's asking a bunch of questions about the case, if they've linked any similar cases, who was the detective working on it, who seems to have died not long after the case. There's a disc with Fiona's last known trace when she called the emergency services line. He dismisses the detective, but he seems to have been looking for a way to get this last recording. He starts to listen to the recording. She says there's something outside, and it's smiling at her. Ben is driving to pick up Chloe. they've both been contracted to do a job. He had gotten an email 2 days before from a Dr. Alex Sparling. The email discussed how he was funding a private project and he wanted to meet Ben French, who came recommended, and talk about their future collaboration. Ben hadn't had much luck after college. He was in and out of retail jobs, so he decided to go. He then goes to talk about how he did really well in school, but real life is kicking him farther and farther to the ground. Ben and Chloe, they've abandoned the car, and they've been walking for 2 hours to, I assume, the village. Ben is going because he's collecting stories, folklore-type stories. His whole thesis from college was about preserving what would otherwise have been lost. He graduated with a master's in history. He went around and collected stories from older people. One story was about a woman who believed in the banshee, but he soon finds out her husband had a little fun with her and the grandkids, and now they all believe it's real. Chloe is an archaeologist. She's apparently the first to ever set foot in the village. She doesn't think she'll find anything, but she's willing to take the good doctor's money all the same. When Ben meets Dr. Sparling and Chloe for the first time, Sparling wants just the two of them for his project and had them sign an NDA. After they sign, Sparling gets down to business and shows them a survey map from the 1830s of a village named Tir Malach. Then he shows an aerial view of the same area. He talks about how someone took a picture of the village a few months ago and nothing has changed in 200 years. Then they discuss how they're going to get to the village since there are no road access. Dr. Sparling tells Ben that he should ask the villagers about the creeper. Back to Chloe and Ben, they're getting closer to the village when they hear a bell clang, which was an alarm, one of those string ones you walk into. They look around them and they find more and more bells. They see smoke in the distance and they finally know they're getting close. Suddenly, a little girl appears in front of them. She seems to stand like her legs are two different lengths. Ben tries to talk to her, but she runs away. They walk a little further ahead, and they see the girl running towards some men. And they notice the way she runs, and Ben confirms her legs are different lengths. And he's surprised she can walk, let alone run. As they try to chase her down, they find a narrow hollow framed by thorns. Ben goes first, and when he's finally through, he sees a man and the girl who seems to be waiting for them. The man is described as tall and wiry, like a sculptor had picked his creation apart, leaving only the skeletal frame. His clothing is all black or brown, like dirt, skin like leather, his jaw was skewed to one side, his nose was swollen and drooped to his upper lip. Ben walks over and tried to talk to them again. The man starts talking to Ben, asking them why they're there and who sent them. Ben tells them they're only there to survey the land and talk to the people, and then they'll leave. The man says they have to leave tomorrow, then proceeds to lead them to the village. As they walk, they pass a cottage that looks like it's been burnt down and decaying with the surrounding nature. When asked, the man walks faster away from the area. It's described as, quote, "There was something unnaturally cold about that cottage. A memory, maybe? A tragedy that pined for peace, but instead lingered eternally in one spot. It yearned to escape." End quote. And Ben says, "Hell isn't a fiery place, but sadness and cold." They got into the village, and the cottages are disheveled, and you can tell they used to have pride in their homes, but now the colors and everything is faded. When you get to the man's house, everyone is standing outside their homes, just staring. They were filthy and wore the simplest of rags. Some of their bodies were contorted from labor or birth defects. Some of them were blind. It's mentioned that this wasn't living, it was surviving. When Ben saw them, he felt like he shouldn't be there and was tongue-tied when asked how many he wanted to speak to, and he said as many as he could, and the man replied, "You have until dark." Chloe starts to tell them that Ben just wants to talk, and a woman steps out. She was tan and had freckles from being in the sun, and her spine was arched. She bowed to him, and Ben asked if he could speak to some of the people, which she agreed, but he was not allowed to speak to the children. The woman started picking the people he would speak to. While apprehensive, they didn't seem bothered to talk to Ben. One lady he described looked like a witch in the woods hungry for young bones. Ben heard a cry from somebody's cottage, but he didn't want to be rude, so he left it alone. Chloe was talking to some of the men, and one pointed behind her and said Carol, but was told Carol would not speak with them. The village is described as resembling an abandoned building site, stuff piled here and there, barely any space between the cottages. While Ben gets started, Chloe goes to survey the land on her own. Ben begins with Mary, the first woman who stepped up. He asks her if she's lived in the village all of her life and what it was like growing up there. He asks if she's ever left the village, which she has not, because they have everything they need there and everyone is safe there. When asked, safe from what, she doesn't answer. Then Ben asks about stories, but when pushed a little further, she gets agitated and tells him there are things that he should know that nobody should know, and that they live there because they have to. Annie asks about the bells, which she said she didn't know about. Then she gets up to leave, and Ben, thinking he can ask the one question Sparling was interested in knowing about, but he didn't get the chance to. After that, he counted 9 total people there to talk. He took the next person, New. He asks her if anyone has ever left, and she says no one, especially not her, would leave because she doesn't look right. She would never be, quote, chosen. I should mention that she had a shawl that was wrapped around her head, and her skull seemed to look like it was never fully formed around her forehead. She didn't have any ears, and she had wisps of hair. He asks her about stories as a child, which she has none, and then he asks if she's afraid of anything, and she replies with the same question, which he says no, and she says it must be nice and tells him he should leave. But when asked why, she won't say. He compliments her attire to try and get her on his side, and then asks about the creeper. She then immediately stands and lets herself out. For hours, he tried to talk to the people, but the villagers were very tight-lipped, and he barely got anything outside of a yes or no answer. When the creeper was brought up, they would either up and leave or just stare at him creepily. He was talking to the last guy, who mentions that the blind takes care of the sheep at night, when a bell goes off and the guy gets up and leaves. When Ben goes outside, it looks like people are locking up for the night, but then the girl sneaks up behind them. She tells them he's coming. But when they ask who, she says, "I'm not allowed to talk about him. That's how he finds you." Chloe asks for a name, and she doesn't know his name, but tells them, quote, "Three times you see him, the first night he's far, far away, then the next night he's closer, so close that you can see him, and he can see you, and then on the third night, his big ugly face is at your window. The fourth night is your last one, because then, uh-oh," end quote. Chloe wants to know what that means, and she responds, "That's when the creeper kills you." And then the tall man, Ben had named Wasp, started running towards them, scared, grabs the girl, asking what she told them, which Ben lied and said nothing. She was just dancing for them. He then tells them they should never have come here. Ben can't understand why no one in the village mentioned this rhyme. Maybe he thought he was asking the wrong question. He thought that this village had to be dysfunctional and people were just being secretive to be isolated, but he suspected that they knew more than they were saying. Now, as the last door shut, a quiet fell over the village and the village seemed more sinister in the silence. Chloe passed them a flashlight and they went to build a campsite, so they headed back the way they originally came in from. And Ben was telling her if they leave before dawn, they can avoid meeting anybody. Chloe asked him how the interviews went, and he says that nobody really told him anything of use, and Chloe said at least the kid gave you everything you needed. And as they were going to the spot, Chloe noticed that somebody was in their path. It was one of the blind women of the village who take care of the sheep, and she tells him that there's nowhere that he won't find you, the night isn't yours anymore. They let her pass, and they keep going. Ben asks her if she found the church, and she said yes, and starts describing what it looked like. There were carvings of angels on the walls with their faces chipped off. The altar looked like it had a stone cross destroyed. So Ben asked, they tore the building apart and abandoned it. But Chloe said, someone still goes there. Ben said the villagers don't even like talking about the church. They get to the spot and Chloe starts to build the tent. And Ben goes out to look for some wood for the fire. And a branch snaps behind him. and he, thinking it's an animal, just walks back to Chloe. During the night, by the fire, they start talking about the village. Chloe tells him everything she found at the cottage that they first came upon, and how there were symbols all around the cottage, but Ben couldn't place any of the symbols. Then Chloe asks about Jess, his daughter's mom, if they would ever get back together. Then Ben asks about anyone Chloe might have in her life, and then asks why archaeology. And Chloe says it's because of her mom, because her mom loved everything that was old and would make up crazy stories of where they came from. And then Ben asks if Chloe remembers when they came to the village, if she heard anything like someone crying out. But she says no, she can't. But she says maybe they were sick, it's not like there's a pharmacy anywhere. And then they get ready for bed. Before Ben fell asleep, all he could think about was how the blind woman was telling him to run. Ben was woken up in the night by Chloe, saying there was someone outside. She heard footsteps, so they unzipped the window portion of their tent and look outside, but they didn't see anyone. So Chloe ran out to see if she could find anybody, and while they're looking around not seeing anyone at first, Chloe sees him. They both see that somebody is out there. He's far away and very still, he's tall, and they could tell that their fingers were long and pale. And this person was clad in black with a cloak or a coat that showed how skinny they were. He kind of sounds like a Grim Reaper. They try yelling at him, but he hasn't moved, so they decide to go back to the tent because it's freezing. Ben doesn't know why the villagers are trying to scare them. They said they would leave in the morning, so he decides to go back outside to try and see what the man wants, but when he does, the man is gone. Smarling was in his study thinking about his solitary life, how his current housekeeper Lara took over for her mom when she was sick and takes care of everything. He has window shutters that are programmed to roll down before nightfall, and he remembers his father putting wooden boards into every window frame. Lara knocks at his door saying they have a problem. One of those shutters in the master bedroom won't come down, so she asks if he wants her to prepare another bedroom, and he says yes, so she goes to get that done, and he remembers when he had the window shutters installed, the technicians thought he was weird, that he would lock himself night after night, but for him, it wasn't about keeping something in. Lara says she has taken care of everything and tells him which room he'll be staying for the night and goes to leave. And the way he has her leave is she goes out through the door from the study into a room that has another door on the other side. He'll lock the door from his side and then she'll leave and lock the door behind her. Kind of like a petting zoo where they have two doors so the animals can't get out is how I imagined it. Ben wakes up and it was raining outside, but he decides he's going to go visit the church. He walks over there and it's exactly as Chloe said it would be, and he didn't see anything else out of the ordinary, so he decides he's gonna leave. But as he's leaving, he notices somebody had followed him in. It was new from the village. She says the little girl told you, didn't she? And that he should have left when she told him to. She said she told the girl not to say anything, but she doesn't listen to anybody. Ben asked if she was the one outside their camp, which she wasn't, and he asked why anybody would follow them. She says she's not allowed to talk about him, and he says, "Are you talking about the creeper? It's just a fairy tale, you shouldn't be afraid, he's just a man." And she says that he was a man a long time ago, and then she leaves. Ben decides to go to one more spot before he goes back to the tent. He goes to the cemetery, and in the cemetery he finds a pair of sunglasses, and he's wondering why, if others had been to the village, why was there no record of this place? Why was the church in ruins? Why was everything defaced? Just why? He goes back to the campsite and he notices there's a slash in the tent and he can't find Chloe anywhere. And naturally, he starts to panic, but then she sneaks up behind him and he asks what happened to the tent, and she said she's leaving it behind and she doesn't want the villagers to use it, so she destroyed it. And he shows her the sunglasses he found in the cemetery and they realize that they were not the first people there. They get everything ready and they start heading back to the car. Ben thinks it's all superstitious nonsense invented by children, and it makes him think of his aunt, who was a little eccentric. He remembers his aunt smelling of sage, always having a stone to rub in one hand, and floating around the house whenever she came by uninvited. Both of his parents thought she was a nuisance, but one day in October, she came over unannounced, and when his parents walked away, she started to strangle him. but looking past them and talking to someone behind them that he couldn't see. His dad pried her off of him, and that was the last time he ever saw her. It was after that he stopped believing in anything imaginary and make-believe. As they get closer to the car, Chloe noticed that there are footprints that were not theirs, and then they noticed the car. There are symbols carved into the exterior, but they decide not to worry about it, they just want to get out of there. On the way back, Ben brings up the man from the night before, and how he probably has a cold from standing out all night. Chloe's not so sure because he didn't look right, and Ben said he was too far away for him to really see anything weird, but he tells her they're all stories. Chloe decides to take a nap in the car, but while she's sleeping, Ben wants to listen to his interviews, so he starts listening to them one by one, and in between interviews where it's nothing but silence, he hears breathing. And for the breathing to be this loud, they would have had to be right above the recorder. Ben believes it's a dog, so he just lets it go and counts himself lucky that the recorder wasn't damaged. But then he hears his own voice coming back, and he realizes there was no one else in the room, and wonders what he just heard. But he decides maybe it's faulty, his recorder is old, and he just leaves it alone. Ben questions Chloe how Sparling knew to ask about the creeper, and Chloe thinks he definitely knows more than he's letting on, and why he would even send them there since there's literally nothing. And so he decides he wants to give his old supervisor at the university a call, since he was the one that recommended him to Sparling. And he tells him he called because he wants to know about Alex Sparling, except his old supervisor has no idea who he's talking about and has never spoken to him. But he has heard of the name because one of his students was approached by him, a student named Carol Fortune. Is this Carol who doesn't want to talk to you, Carol? He asks him if he knows what Sparling wanted from her, which of course he doesn't, and he says that if Sparling was an academic, he would know. So then it makes the two of them wonder, who is Alex Sparling? They go to Chloe's house and decide to use that as their base of operations while they write up the report for Sparling since her roommate was out of town. And Chloe shows him a 3D rendering of the church, but she still can't seem to place where any of these symbols come from. Ben wonders if the kids drew them on the cottage, and he sits down and starts to write his essay of the creeper. Ben wonders if he should put the rhyme in there, if he shouldn't put this, if he shouldn't put that, and Chloe says just put everything in it. They then decide to take a break, and Chloe goes to close the curtains, and that's when she sees him outside under the streetlight. Ben also takes a look outside and sees him and assumes it's someone from the village that followed them to try and scare them, and Chloe starts whispering the rhyme. Ben runs out to try and catch him, but he's gone. He runs over to a neighbor's house and starts knocking, and an old lady cracks the door open, and he asks her if she saw anyone outside, and she says the only person she saw was him, and they wonder how he got away so quickly. Sparling reminisces about his childhood, how his mother went first, she went kicking and screaming, and then when his dad went, he went quietly. He states how he was only 7 the first time he saw him. His parents thought he was old enough to be alone, but shortly after, panels were added to the windows. The second time, he was taking an exam at his university, and it finished later than he wanted to. And then his car broke down on the way home, so he ran all the way, only for the door to be locked, and his dad was already passed out. And he hasn't seen the night since. He knows without the shutters, the smiling face would be waiting for him. Ben and Chloe woke up in the morning, and Chloe had told him that she had been doing some research to find out about Carol Fortune, and apparently she's been missing for 2 years. And she shows him a picture of her, and in the picture there's something very familiar, a pair of sunglasses, the kind he found in the graveyard. But Ben says those sunglasses are everywhere, it doesn't mean anything. Chloe points out that Sparling had contacted her and then she disappeared, so that couldn't be a coincidence. Ben wonders if Sparling sent Carol Fortune to the village, even though Chloe had said the night before that there's nothing there. Chloe brings up the rhyme again, and Ben tells her it's just a story, it's not real. So they decide to give Sparling a call, and they go through all the paperwork that they got from him, they can't find his number. So Chloe decides to email him with the address that he used to email them originally, but then she gets an automated response saying the email address no longer exists. And as they start to get angry, Chloe gets a call from a private number, which ends up being Sparling. He asks Ben if anyone he interviewed mentioned the Creeper. He said nobody he interviewed even mentioned it, but a child told them, and when they mentioned that somebody followed them to the campsite and then to the house, Sparling hangs up on them. After that, they decide they're going to give Carol Fortune's detective a call. When he answers, he asks him if he knows Dr. Alex Sparling and tells him that he thinks what happened to Carol Fortune is happening to them. And then he tells Detective Barry everything outside of the actual superstition part. And the detective asks him what exactly he's accusing Sparling of. And Ben says he just wants to talk to the guy, so the detective gives him his address, but not to mention that it was from him. The detective tells Ben that Sparling is a very private man, and he might not take his call. Ben thinks he'll definitely let them in for a chat, and that he doesn't seem so bad, but the detective thinks that he is very much mistaken about Sparling. So the two of them head out to see the doctor. And when they get there, there is a massive gate with vertical bars, and as Chloe put it, it doesn't look very welcoming. They get to the gate and ring the bell. The housekeeper tells them that the doctor isn't receiving visitors, but he tells her their name and says if he doesn't open the gate, they're going to climb over the wall. And the next time the intercom answers, it's Sparling, and he tells them to follow the driveway and his housekeeper will show them to a study. As they're driving through, Chloe notices his windows and how they have mechanical shutters. And when they get to the study, Chloe wants to know who's following them. And Sparling says that he hasn't been quite honest with them, but he needed to know if the people of the village still lived as prisoners. And when they asked him what the village has to do with him, he tells him that something happened there a long time ago, and it's the curse of his family, the reason why the people don't leave, and the reason why they didn't want to speak to them. Chloe says the Creeper, and Ben laughs, saying, oh, that's just superstition, it's not real. But Sparling tells him that it's very real. Ben just says that he's an adult and he needs to grow up and stop believing in fairy tales. Ben shows him the sunglasses he found in the graveyard, and he says he knew that others have been there to the village. And Sparling says of course, because he was the one who sent them there. And Sparling says that he's going to tell them something, that if they don't believe him, they won't survive to see next week. Sparling starts to tell a story. His ancestor was the village clergyman, and he was the last of the family to die there. He had a wife and son, and he cared for the community. But there was one man that he had never met who lived alone on the outskirts of the village for as long as the oldest person could recall. Months had gone by without anyone seeing him, so they believed he died. But even with the rumors, the priest would visit his home every week to try and befriend him and to encourage him to join the church. And because of how isolated the village was, they didn't suffer from famine or illness. But there came a time when people were dying in a very short period. The priest would go give counsel, but there were times when he left them, he would feel a presence. And any time anyone saw the presence, another life was lost. He was told the body was tall and spindly and that he had no hair on his head. The man didn't resemble anyone the priest knew or met, and he knew there had to be a simple explanation. So one day in his church, he asked for the opinion of his people, and a little girl answered. She told him that she had seen the man on the far end of their family's land. And when asked if she had seen him again, she said she saw him the night after, but closer. Sparling interjects and says the priest should not have let the child speak with so many present because he couldn't deal with it quietly after that. The child's dad wanted this taken care of, so everybody rushed over to the old man's cottage and barged in, despite the priest's words, but they retreated back because the house smelled wrong. Blood stained the floors, there were symbols all over, parchments laid scattered around, but the man was not there. No clothes, no food, no water, nothing. Later that night, as the priest drew his curtains shut, he saw a figure on the far wall. He rushed outside, but the man was gone. He kept the sight a secret, and everybody carried on thinking they had gotten rid of the evil. The following night, the priest had the curtains drawn and the door, which was always open, locked. And after his family went to bed, he spied through the curtains and saw the man, but he was closer. So the priest went back to the cottage and he took any writings he could find and went through all the writings, but the handwriting went from legible to maniacal. But one of the earlier passages was readable, and in it the man was writing that he was afraid of death, and he wanted to live forever, and so he pleaded with dark powers. But his writing soon became something he couldn't read, and the priest thought that the evil had wielded him into writing their contract and signing it. One entry had a hidden clause of his soul agreement that the evil left him deformed. He had become immortal, but he was a slave, cursed never to know love or society. He had become the creeper. You see him for 3 nights, and he draws closer each day. The 4th night is always the last. The creeper was a man, but now he's something else, and he's able to move freely and show up anywhere. The priest burnt the writings, thinking that might save the man. But the next night, when his family was asleep, he opened the curtains slightly. And Sparling here says that he won't tell them what the priest saw, but what he saw was more sinister than he could have ever imagined. So the priest, the next day, made arrangements for his family to travel overseas, and his last act in the village was to warn every single person of the creeper's existence. But he doomed them, because to know him is to see him. So his family left, and looking at the shoreline as they drifted away, the creeper was watching them. Sparling states that his ancestors learned to avoid the night, and the rules for survival were passed down. And he said that he needed to know if the village still feared him, if the creeper still existed, if he was still a prisoner. Sparling says there's only one thing they can do, and it's to fear him. Live alone, don't have children. Chloe then turns to Ben, asks him about his daughter, and Sparling says he's terribly sorry for his daughter. After hearing all of this, Ben decided to give Jess a call to make sure his daughter was okay. They had a slight fight over the phone that Ben can't just call whenever he remembers he has a kid, and he got angry and ended the call. But when Chloe asked how his daughter was, Ben said everything's fine, nobody's coming after them. Sparling asks how old his kid is. She's 3. Sparling then goes to say that 3-year-olds don't typically have a habit of looking out their windows. And Chloe asks the big question, what happened to the others? Sparling feigns ignorance, but Ben says Carol Fortune and any other perfect candidates that he's failed to mention, and they want to know what happened to her. Sparling tells them that Carol and the others met with the same fate. He tells them the adults don't talk about him. They know better. It's always the children who bring it up. But Carol hadn't called for help like some of the others had, like they had, and no one has seen her since, and her body has never been recovered. Ben and Chloe argue a little bit. She's terrified. He thinks it's a story, and Sparling tells him that they're welcome to spend the night, but Ben misunderstands, thinking the old man wants Chloe around, and so he says he wants his money and they'll leave. Sparling says he can give him the money now and they'll never see each other again, or he can come back on Monday and he'll double it. Ben says to triple it, and they've got a deal. So then they get ready to leave, and as they're driving, they talk about Sparling and how Ben doesn't believe any of it. Ben thinks that Sparling spent his entire life in that house, so he's probably a little crazy. Sparling makes a phone call to the one person he knows could have compromised his location. He tells the detective that he received 2 visitors who knew exactly where he lived and how he could make the detective's life very hard if he doesn't tell him exactly what he told them. So the detective told him as much as he could remember about what he told Ben about Carol. But then the detective asks why they would connect Sparling to the disappearance, and Sparling basically tells him to mind his own business. But Sparling tells him, in the event that they call him again, to let them believe he will help them but do absolutely nothing, and then call him and tell him if anything happens. And then he should go to Chloe's house and take all their documents and laptops and anything of interest on Monday, because the house will be empty anyways. After he hangs up, he thinks back to Fiona Quinn's emergency call and how terrified she sounded, but the girl said so much to the operator that the operator disappeared within a week. He knew Chloe was actually terrified and wouldn't say anything to anyone, but Ben was so skeptical and unconvinced that Sparling knew that skepticism would mean he wouldn't make it to Monday. They got back to Chloe's house, They drew all the curtains and closed all the blinds. Ben started tidying up all the paperwork and documents, and he told Chloe he was gonna burn everything about Alex Sparling and the village, and that they should celebrate because on Monday they were going to be rich. They start drinking and talking and then asking each other what they're going to do with the money, and they joke around. Chloe said he should buy a cottage in the village, and Ben said he should renovate the black one on the hill. Which makes Chloe wonder if that's the cottage Sparling was talking about. Ben says it's a coincidence. He probably picked it out on the map. But Chloe tells him that everything he told them lines up with everything they've seen, and they debate back and forth about the creeper being real and the creeper being a story, and Chloe is visibly scared. And so to prove to her that the creeper's fake, Ben starts walking towards the window to open the curtains, and Chloe is pleading with him not to open the curtains. And he tells her none of it's real and quickly opens the curtains to reveal the face that's looking in on them. Quote, "Its smile was unflinching, stretched and possibly wide, as though the cheekbones had been shattered and reformed. Teeth were rooted in black gums, each one paired and veined with decay. The skin was ghostly white. Eyes, like the malformed mouth, were sickeningly caricatured, bloated like pus-filled sores, bulging out with their sockets. The head was hairless, crooked, and cracked, with the chin bone split beneath the skin, torn apart by the sheer force of that smile." End quote. He quickly closed the curtains when he heard Chloe screaming, and sat down and couldn't possibly believe that the creeper was real, and that everything Alex Sparling had told them was true. Ben couldn't believe what he had done. It wasn't just that he brought this upon himself, but he brought this upon his daughter and Chloe. And he imagined the missing persons poster like Carol, and he decided to give Detective Barry a call. And he tells the detective that the thing is outside. He's outside. And that they went to see Sparling, and Sparling was responsible for Carol Fortune's murder. That there were other people, and they were all gone and dead or missing. And the detective asks if Sparling killed her, and he says no, the one who killed her is outside the window right now. And Ben has to tell him that this isn't a joke, and that they really need help. And so Barry says, okay, leave it to him, don't tell anyone, don't call anyone, just stay right where you are. And then he hangs up. Ben wonders why he didn't just say he had a daughter, then he wouldn't be in this mess. He tries calling Jess, but she won't answer. And then he wonders if he has enough time to go see his daughter, to go see his parents. He decides to give his parents a call instead, to say his last goodbyes. The last thing he tells them was that if anything should happen to him, that they need to look out for his daughter. Then he decides that they have to go back to the village. He wakes Chloe up and tells her it's time to go. The day starts with the shutters slowly rolling up in Alex's room. He walks into his study and looks at all the books that he's curated throughout his years as a hobby, and then the phone rings. It was Detective Barry. He tells Sparling that they did contact him the night before, and he was asked if he did nothing by Sparling, and he said he didn't help them, but he did drive up to Chloe's house and park and watch the house to see if they did anything. And he tells Sparling that they left the city at first light, and he followed them until he lost them. But based on where they were going, Sparling knew exactly where they were headed, and Sparling wonders why he never thought to go back to the source before. He tells the detective that he can go to Chloe's house and take all the documents instead of waiting until Monday. Sparling thinks about how he usually sends a team to the village every 2 years, but now with this new revelation, he could send another team the following year. Ben and Chloe start the long trek back to the village, and Ben argues against Chloe joining him, but Chloe said that she's the archaeologist and he'd probably miss things if he went by himself, so she has to go with him. Also, quick aside here, what is she supposed to do? Just sit at home until the thing comes after her? They get to the cottage on the hill and they realize that the village has an underground stream and the cottage looks like it's on an island. So they wade through the water to get to the house, and Chloe notices there are new symbols drawn on the cottage. Ben goes to take the planks off the door so that they can get in, and when the door opens, they are met with a foul odor. Ben asks about the symbols, and Chloe says they're all down low on the wall, so maybe Ben was right and it's the kids doing it. They go inside, and they walk around, they look at everything, and Ben worries that they came all this way for nothing. But Chloe finds something on the ground in a corner. There was a skeletal human remain. Chloe says she thinks he was burnt alive, sitting in the corner with all the windows and door boarded up and no way out. Ben wonders if it wasn't an accident, and she said no, someone locked him up because he looks like he just sat in the corner and didn't even try to get out. They don't know who this is, but they're going to find out. They get to the village and slowly realize that there's nobody around. Then they hear a groan, and Ben goes straight for the house that was guarded before when he heard the cry, but now there was no one in the way. What it ended up being was a man on top of a table in the center of the room, bound by wires, his head bandaged tightly so many times to make his skull look misshapen, a tear over his mouth to keep him from suffocating, and his fingers were freshly broken. Rope tied around his wrist lacerated until you could see the bone. There was a bucket on the floor with red water, and blood splattered across the walls. Chloe went by the man to try and give him some relief with the wires binding him, but it seemed to make it worse, so she tried to find a way to get him out. As they got him unbound to the table, the man was screaming so loud that Ben had to walk out of the cottage, and then he heard a girl's voice, and there was the girl that changed his and Chloe's life by telling them the rhyme. The little girl goes inside the house, sees that the man has been unbound, and she tells him he's not ready, you shouldn't have done that. Ben goes back outside and he looks around and he realizes that nobody is barricading themselves in their house and night is coming. He looks in the distance and he sees some light, and he tells Chloe that there's something burning on the other side of the village, and they see that it's towards the church, and they go to the church. As they got closer, they could hear voices chanting. They could also hear a man speaking. The wasp was the one who was speaking. He wondered if the villagers were not in their homes, maybe they were celebrating, and the curse had been lifted. The wasp was wearing a black coat or habit and a loose hood pulled over his head. Then he looked all around at everybody and realized they were all dressed as the creeper. And as they removed their cowls, not a single person was born without some sort of defect of the bone. When he went back to Chloe, she told him they were out of time. Night was here. So they went back to the cemetery to await the end together. They started to hear rustling from behind them, and the girl popped out, and she said, "Found you. They're here." And then they heard shuffling of bodies that were coming for them. And both of them ran. They were just running in the dark. But at some point, Chloe fell and twisted her ankle, and Ben knew it was all over. The villagers swarmed them. Some of them took Ben, some of them took Chloe, and separated them. Ben realized in this moment, nobody knew where he was. They were dragged back to the village, and the villagers had formed a circle around them. He looked around to see if he could see anyone familiar, but all he saw was a mass of bodies. And then the crowd parted, and the wasp came into the circle. The wasp said, "She spoke to you about him. She can't help herself, that little one." And he asked how many times they'd seen him. They'd seen him 3 times. And he responds, "What did you think was going to happen when you came back here? Did you think you'd be safe?" But Ben asks, "How are they outside in the dark? Is it over?" The wasp replies, "It's never over as long as we believe. Then he will never die." He continues and says Sparling sent them always 2 every 2 years, and that his family was once among theirs. Ben said yes, they knew everything, that Sparling had told them everything, how the priest doomed them. And the wasp said they weren't doomed, their eyes were open to the truth that the priest was a false prophet, guiding them to a god that did not listen, that did not care. And then he asked, "What does Sparling think happened to his ancestor?" And Chloe guessed, "They burnt him alive. They killed him to prove that their faith to the creeper was true." Ben asked if they were going to torture them, and he in turn tells him, "Why would he torture them when they've been chosen? Being chosen is the greatest honor." Then he asks his people to bring him, and they bring over the tortured man. The wasp looks at the tortured man with approval. He looks him over, sees how his arms have been stretched to horrific lengths, checks his fingers, broken hands, and he nods his approval. And then the bandages around his head are slowly unwound, and they realize his skull had been cracked and its bones remodeled, and a blade had been taken to his mouth and dragged through each cheek and held together with fishing line, but the wounds were healing. Every tooth had been filed to a point, his ears had been hacked off, his nose had no cartilage. Then Nu stepped out of the crowd, and she tells him, quote, "Now you know why the creeper would never choose me. I told you, I don't look right, but he's perfect. He's the most perfect one I've ever seen," end quote. And then Ben understands that it was the wasp who murdered all the people. And the wasp says, "The creeper endures through us. The creeper was a man, now he's many men. Men chosen to carry out the curse in his name. He couldn't magically appear, and Sparling had hidden away his entire life for nothing." Apparently the night that they had decided to show up to the village was the Festival of Transcendence, where they offer one of their own to be the creeper's eternal promise. Chloe starts screaming that it's not real, that they're psychos, that they don't have to do this, and the wasp grabs her by the throat and suspends her in the air. And Ben was grabbed by the villagers, and then they bring the tortured man so he can make his first kill as the creeper. He climbs on top of Chloe and then tries to strangle her, but because his fingers were still broken, he couldn't close around her neck. And all of a sudden, Chloe's right arm toppled the one holding her arm down, and with her free hand, she grabs the hammer from the pocket of her parka, aiming it straight for the one looking at his fingers. But the wasp kicked her arm mid-swing, sending the hammer out of reach, and he grabbed the hammer and presented it to the man. The man looked at Chloe as she screamed and screamed, and the hammer came down again and again and again. Chloe was dead from the first blow. As Ben watches them lather Chloe in black slimy mud, he remembers what his parents had told him, that he had no reason to fear myths and monsters, it was the people. It was always the people. And then the wasp turned to look at Ben and told him he tried to tell him to leave, but now that he's seen him three times, tonight would be his last. And Ben tells him they don't even have to hold him down, they can just kill him and get it over with. While he's kneeling, Ben notices tire tracks in the mud, and knew then that the villagers knew the route that his candidates took every 2 years. In that moment, he realized what his aunt had seen all those years ago. Then the creeper came and knelt in front of him, and Ben told him to remember what he told him, that it was okay and that he was sorry they did this to him, but he needed the creeper to do one last thing for him. After that, he wouldn't stop the creeper from killing him. But he wanted the creeper to forget the rules and go to Alex Sparling's house, kill him, and burn it all down. It seemed like the creeper nodded his head, and then his fingers slowly wrapped around Ben's neck. Epilogue. Sparling was narrowing his list of 10 potential candidates. It had been 5 months since Ben and Chloe returned to the village, and of course, they've never been heard from again. This time, he decided that when they came back from the village, he would do things differently. He would tell them how the creeper's curse came to be and see if they would go back to the village to save themselves. On this particular night, his housekeeper had called off because her mother was sick, and so he was all alone. He decided he was going to make himself something to eat when the door to the corridor was locked. He knocked on the door, no response, so he tried again and nothing. So he didn't think anything of it, decided to sit back down. Then he remembered that he stored the keys to his house in the top drawer of his desk. So he went and rummaged around, but the keys were not there. His housekeeper locked the outside door. The key to the inner one was always in the keyhole, but that was also missing, and it was locked. So he was stuck in the study. But then he heard a sound he hears every day and every night. The grinding of the shutters. They were lifting. Every single panel in the study was going up, leaving only the curtains between him and the night. And he realized this wasn't by chance. Someone did this on purpose. He ran to the door and started hammering on it, calling for his housekeeper, and then the sound of smashed glass could be heard. The curtains look like it was moving, and another smashed glass, and then another, and Sparling is pleading that he has money, just leave him alone. Then he hears feet crunching on broken glass. He hears the curtains being wrenched off the walls and onto the ground one by one. Every curtain was torn from the wall, and every broken window was unprotected. Whoever was in the room grabbed the fire poker and was scratching it at the grate. Then he hears a log tumbling onto the floor and the poker being dropped, and then something was burning. But still he wouldn't open his eyes and he wouldn't turn around. Sparling asks if it's Barry. He asks if it's Ben, pleading to tell them who they are. He could feel the fire, he could smell the smoke, and he thought it couldn't be the Creeper. He hadn't seen them three times yet. And he cries out that you can't do this, I haven't seen you. And he felt cold fingers seizing his throat, and he couldn't pry himself free. And then he opens his eyes, and this was nothing like he had imagined. The Creeper was more terrifying than even he thought. Ooh, that's it. That's the whole book. What did you think? The beginning I thought was a little slow. I think it wasn't until they saw the Creeper for the second time and finding out the origin of the Creeper that I think things really started going. There is something that is never brought back up. It's the breathing and the recording. It's mentioned that first time in the car, and then Ben mentions it one other time in the book, but then that's it. Who's breathing in the recording? Another thing in the book is when Carol is mentioned early in the book, but they're told Carol won't speak to them. What exactly did they mean? I mean, we can assume Carol is dead, but like, Carol won't speak to them because she's dead under the ground, or what? Why did they even bring that up? If they brought up Carol as a scare tactic, they didn't even know who Carol was at this point, so I just don't really understand. It does make sense to me also that the Creeper was not actually real, but just a bunch of people who self-mutilated themselves to look like the Creeper. I'm not a big fan of Ben. I understand because of how he is and who he is that he just can't come to believe when Chloe was terrified and telling him that everything made sense to her. Also, I hardly ever mention it here, but in the book, Ben is constantly thinking about his daughter, but when he talks to Jess on the phone, she makes it seem like he never calls to talk to her. Like, I understand you have a dead-end job, and you feel like you don't have what it takes to take care of your daughter, but you can't call or visit your daughter? I don't even think she lived that far. And I feel bad for Chloe because she doesn't have any family, so no one's really gonna be looking for her. And then there's the doctor, Alex Sparling. The man who willingly sends people to what he knows is their death. He doesn't know how they die, but he knows if they go, they'll be dead within the week. So I feel like his final moments are justified. And the fact that the Creeper listened to Ben and took on his final favor, karmic justice for the win. One last thing I do want to mention is, you find out at the end that the villagers do in fact have a car. And they learn the route that the people took to get there. But how do they know where you live? Once you left that route, because all these people live different places, and I'm assuming if you were able to leave the country, you'd be okay. So how did they figure out where Chloe lived? I would understand maybe if they followed behind their car for a while, but I feel like Ben would have noticed somebody following them. But anyways, regardless of all of that, I'm gonna give this one a 4 out of 5 paws. I did enjoy this one, and I don't think this was as spooky as the internet made it out to be, but I did still enjoy it. Also, after every episode, I'm gonna try and mention which book I'm going to be doing for my next episode. So for this one, my next book is going to be a fantasy book called Under the Earth, Over the Sky by Emily McCosh. Anyways, that's it. Thank you everyone for listening to this episode. I apologize again that it's really late. And if you would be ever so kind, please subscribe, rate, review, share, all that good stuff. And you can follow me at Barks and Bookmarks Pod on Instagram. And please send me recommendations for books or anything you'd like at barksandbookmarks@gmail.com. Until next time, say bye, Percy. See ya.